If you're just joining with us this morning and haven't been with us the last few weeks, just to bring you quickly up to speed as to where we are going through a series looking at the parable, the story that Jesus told of the prodigal son or the father with two sons, depending on your take on the passage. And before I get into that, I want to just set a little bit of context for this morning, and just the words that have been coming this morning, and the touch of God as we've been worshiping. I feel I just want to set a little bit of context for you in that some time ago, we had a prophetic word that was given to us, a prophetic word that provoked us, a prophetic word that challenged us, a prophetic word that could frustrate us if we looked at it the wrong way. And that was a prophetic word about four waves coming upon us. And these waves were waves that would influence us, would change us, would impact us, would equip us, would make us a different people than we are. And the first of those waves, and the biggest of those waves in the prophetic word, was that there'd be a wave of the Holy Spirit that would come. And this was not just a little wave like we might see on Cromer Beach. But the idea was that this is one of those huge waves that maybe the world's best surfers would even fear. That maybe even in Ed's friend's oil tanker would begin to shake when they saw it coming. But God has promised us prophetically that that wave is for us. And as I was gathering with our life group this week, and there were just three of us, and you could think, well, just three, when there could have been a lot more, maybe. What can happen when there's only three? Well, strangely, the Bible says that when there's two or three gathered in His name, Jesus is there. So what can't happen might be the better question. And as we were reading through and talking and discussing a chapter in a book that we're working our way through, something began to stir within the three of us that God was speaking to us about this wave. I wouldn't say we were the most prophetic group. If you wanted to gather that way, we might not have been the most profound group. We definitely weren't the youngest group. But God began to just stir something in our spirits of expectation for this morning. And I'm looking at the two guys, and they're nodding, and they're both on the edge of their seats. And we felt God say to us on Tuesday evening, "Be prepared for my wave to come on Sunday." And already we're beginning to feel the water rising. We're beginning to feel that God has something extraordinary in store for us this morning. And I'd like to bring you on this journey with us, but I thought, well, what do? Do I preach the preach, or do we just go for it? And I felt God say, no, it's in my time. And it just fits. And as we've been going through this, just remind you that last week, Peter so helpfully looked at the Father being patient in His time. How many of you have known God has promised you something, but it's been in His time and not yours? You would like it to be in your time, which is probably now or even yesterday would be good. And some of you are still sitting and waiting for things that God has said years ago. Not because He's lost the promise or you're stepped out of it. He's just patient for His time. And even this morning, as Chris came downstairs, she was listening to something on her iPad. I have no idea what it was, but it was a preach of someone who was just talking about Joseph. Here was Joseph, who was a young man in his family. He was taken into captivity. Everything seemed to go wrong, but he had promises. He had dreams. The dreams that got him into trouble. Dreams that he probably wished were happening now. But it came to a point God was patient, and just at the right time, Joseph was in the right place to be the deliverance that God was promising. A wave of blessing to a people who were starving. A way of salvation for a family that were on the edge. And for us this morning, I believe God has spoken to us and He's been patient. But today, there's something of that fulfillment that He wants to pour out upon us. And today, are we ready back there? We're going to be looking at our Father is compassionate. He is a compassionate Father. And we're going to be looking in this, one who not only is able to love, but one who is love in and of himself. In 1 John 4:8, it says, anyone who does not love does not know God, because God is love. And you have to not just know about love, you have to experience it. In fact, in order to give perfect love, you have to be love in itself. You have to epitomize and be the very core of love. And for God to be compassionate, for our Father to be fully and totally compassionate, it's not just good enough for Him to have experienced love. He needs to be loving Himself to give the compassion that we need to have. And so in the story of the prodigal son, we see this God acting as Father with compassion. In Luke 15:20, it says, and he arose and came to his father. But while he was still a long way off, his father saw him and felt what? Anger? Disdain? Wrath? Who's that? How dare he? No, it says he felt compassion. He felt compassion and ran and embraced him and kissed him. Have you felt the compassion of the Father? Is that your experience? Is that your desire? Is that what is your norm when you come to the Father, that you're experiencing His compassion? You see, the son would have been anticipating wrath. There wasn't much more he could have done wrong. There wasn't much more that you can even dream of that he could have done in order to incur the Father's wrath. He was expecting the harshness of rejection. He had rejected, he had defamed, and he had humiliated the Father. The story would have been known and would have been talked about. You can't just see this as an isolated little thing. It was just a little family issue. This was known around. This would have been something that people would have been talking about. Within his family members, they would have known the hurt and the struggle and the difficulty that the son's action had brought upon that family. The servants and those that around that worked in the household would have known it. It would have been the whisper of the back rooms and the chatter that was going on. Can you imagine? Can you believe? Oh, have you heard? The rumors would have been rife. The others that lived around them, this town, the community they were in, because there had been such a defamation of the Father's character and the Father's name, it would have been known. And so as the son is coming back, all of this is pounding in the back of his head. What have I done? What have I done? And it's out of a desperation, an absolute desperation, that the son makes a decision, I'll go back. I'll go back. He did not take that thought lightly. It was not that he had some other choices and other possibilities that he would try out. But here he was, having thrown everything in the Father's face. No, the Bible doesn't tell us exactly what the household and the family members were expecting. But maybe the reaction of the older son gives us that insight. The older son had no compassion. He expected what was demanded by law to happen. By law, The father had to disown his son. That's what the law of the time said. No choice. 2 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago, Simon was preaching on adoption. What a fantastic morning that was. Just thinking about the adoption, what it means to be adopted as a son. I'm just going to take us there just for a moment in order to set us right for what I'm going to talk about in a minute. But adoption was not like adoption today. I have numerous adopted nieces and nephews. In fact, I have the same number of adopted nieces and nephews as I have natural nieces and nephews, and I got lots. It was quite common in the community that I lived in for children to be adopted. There were a lot of babies available for adoption, and my family were very open to that. I have nieces and nephews. I don't even think of them any differently. They are my nieces and nephews. Back of my mind, I know there's some adoption papers somewhere, but they are my nieces and nephews, and I love them all equally. If you were adopted in biblical times, you were brought into the family and you took on the family name and the family fame. What had happened before no longer existed. If you'd been a criminal before, you were no longer a criminal. Your criminal past was wiped clean. It did not exist. If you had debts before, it was wiped clean. There was no claim back to that debt. In fact, some Jewish scholars have written that if you tried to claim a debt or prosecute for someone for something that they did before they were adopted, you would be charged. It was that strong of a case. And so you have adoption, which is almost a perfect example of salvation. Salvation says, what was before no longer exists. My sin from before is completely wiped clean. There is no condemnation, no recourse, knowing back to my sin before in God's eyes. I am a new creation. Behold, all things are new. It is wiped clean. And that was the understanding of New Testament adoption. Doesn't quite work that way in modern adoption. And we don't think of adopting adults nowadays. But it did then. And so there could be horrendous things that could happen. You say, well, what does that have to do with here? Well, the law would then turn that almost exactly on its head if you then disowned and defamed your family. So you've got the prodigal son who disowns and disdains his family. He says everything and does everything he possibly could do to ruin everything before. So as he's coming back, as he's making this decision to come back, he's realizing that he's actually going against the law of the land to even return and ask for any form of favor whatsoever. What had been his no longer was his. In fact, it was worse than if it had never been. If it had never been, he could come and there'd be nothing to worry about. But now there was everything to worry about. His anticipation would have been, I have no rights as a son to come back, but maybe, just maybe, almost beyond any hope, my father will accept me back as a slave or as a servant. I will have no income. I will have no rights. I will have no name. I will have no money. The best I can hope for is a bit of food and somewhere to sleep. But I will never be tied to my father again. That's what his anticipation was. That's what was expected of those that were watching on. So not only did everyone know that the son had done these horrible things, they were also aware that the father was watching. Because it says he was waiting. He was watching. He was looking. Now, we don't know what they thought he was going to do. Maybe the rumors had come, began to flow. He's making his way back because he says he went a long way away. Maybe he was making his way back and the rumors were coming. We've heard.